everyone, and welcome to the Freed Up Podcast. I'm so glad you're joining us today because we're going to talk about a topic that might make you a little bit stiff because you're wondering, how do I do it? When do I do it? What's the right amount? That is saving. And I'm joined today by my friend Andrew Wheeler. But before we get the chance to talk to him, let's catch up with Brian for a quick recap.
A financially and spiritually wise person is a wise saver. We realize that I need some money in the bank, not just to accommodate the emergencies that I can't see coming my way, like my transmission blows, but I also know there's things that I'm going to have to spend money on that I'm going to need that money to spend it on. Saving is actually delayed spending. You know you're going to need a new car someday. You know that corporate America is going to downsize you someday and you're going to have less money available. That margin in the bank brings freedom. But it's really critical to understand that our savings is not our worth. Our savings is not our ultimate security. That is God. God is my worth. He defines my worth. God is my ultimate security. But I also need to be wise in knowing that when I have resources in the bank, I'm going to need them, and that margin is powerful. It's countercultural, and it actually brings freedom.
Welcome, Andrew. So glad to have you. So glad you could be with us today. Excited for our listeners to learn from you. Andrew is a content writer for Good Sense, and he is daily in this sort of content about money. He knows a lot. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Hannah. It's great to be here.
You know what? Before we get started, I just gave you this awesome introduction, but maybe some of our audience is like, what is Good Sense? What qualifies him? Tell me, what is Good Sense?
Good Sense is probably the best way to think of it is a financial stewardship ministry. So we train people in the areas of biblical financial stewardship, specifically working through churches. So things like, you know, what does the Bible tell us about money? And then how does that work out in our daily lives?
That's awesome. That's awesome. So to start off, we're talking about saving today, which for some folks, for me, for a lot of us, can feel really boring and stuffy. And more so, a lot of folks might be asking, I know I'm supposed to save, but we're also supposed to give, and we're also supposed to retire our debt. We're also supposed to prioritize our non-negotiables. How do we do that? What comes first? Start me at the beginning.
Yeah, great question. So as far as saving is concerned, I mean, I think we have to start with the why of saving. And, you know, one of the big things for me is I think saving helps us build up anticipation for something, right? I mean, we don't think of saving as exciting, but, you know, think about when Christmas rolls around every year and that calendar switches over from November to December. Kids start getting excited about getting out of school, and we're making plans for getting together with family and giving and receiving gifts and church services. And how different would that be if Christmas was just a random day every year and you never knew till the day before when it was going to happen? I mean, you might still have a pretty good day, but it's really the anticipation that builds that up. And saving is kind of the same way. Saving allows us to anticipate what we're going to do with that money. And I think it creates, as a result of that, it creates more of a sense of gratitude when we get there. You know, it's one thing if I just put a vacation on a credit card and I don't think about it again until the credit card bill comes due. But if I'm saving up for that vacation for months and dreaming about what I'm going to do and the food I'm going to eat and the places I'm going to see, or when I get there, just the gratitude that I feel and the joy is so much greater. I think also that saving is, it's really, we've talked about how financial stewardship is part of our discipleship. It's part of our spiritual growth. And saving really in particular is a way in which we can develop ourselves spiritually. I mean, saving develops characteristics like patience and perseverance. And James tells us that perseverance leads to maturity. So spiritually mature people tend to be savers because they understand the relationship between money and spiritual growth. So how do we balance that then? The second part of your question, how do we balance the giving and the saving and, you know, retiring debt and all those things? I think first of all, it's got to start with where our heart is. And Jesus tells us that where our treasure is, there our heart will be also. So I think it's a matter of understanding that our money tends not to follow our heart. It tends to lead our heart. And so when we think about giving, that's the way we should think about giving, that our money is leading our heart. And, you know, I know there's a lot of different philosophies about giving out there, but it really is about, you know, where is our heart? Once we have that settled with God and we've, you know, kind of incorporated that into a spending plan, then we're looking at, you know, how do we balance savings with, you know, debt retirement and short-term, long-term savings, all that kind of stuff. I would say, first of all, the biggest thing is get an emergency savings fund together quickly. Emergency savings is something that should be relatively quick to perform. If you're putting money into retirement, or even if you're making extra payments on your credit cards, those are good things to do. But if you don't have an emergency savings fund, then, you know, that money that you're putting into retiring your credit cards, you're going to just end up spending back on those credit cards as soon as a crisis comes up. So establishing that emergency savings really is the first priority. Once that's done, then there's kind of a balance to be found between, you know, retirement savings, which is longer term, getting rid of consumer debt, and then establishing something we call a three-month net, which I know we'll talk about more in detail later. But where you go on that kind of depends on where your financial situation is. If you're a person who is, you know, barely making ends meet, end of the month, you know, as Brian puts it, too much month for the money, you know, if you're in that situation, then retiring debt needs to be top priority. You need to create some margin in your life. And how much of that debt you need to retire before you start thinking about longer term savings, that's an individual decision. But once you get to a point where you feel like you have some of that margin, the next thing to do would be to maximize any matching opportunities that your employer has through a 401k or similar program, because that's free money, first of all. It's tax-deferred money. So, you know, if you're not making ends meet from month to month, it doesn't make sense to be doing that. But once you've got that first part down, maximizing the 401k match should become a very high priority, along with retiring the rest of your consumer debt and establishing that three-month net.
Wow. You just said so much good stuff. So let's back up to two things. The first one is, you know, like you said, we are talking to people in different lanes here. We've got that lane that is maybe looking to try to make ends meet. And we got somebody that's making ends meet, but still no margin, still not really intentional. And we've got somebody that hasn't thought about ends in a really long time. Talk to me about what are the practical ways to build that emergency fund, that safety net. So we're really talking to these first two lanes. And you know, tell us, Andrew, in what ways have you done that? And the reason I'm asking that, because maybe there is something in there for the people that haven't thought about that ends in a long time. Maybe they actually haven't thought about their savings more as an emergency, but as something to be hoarded. So really walk us through that practical idea about that. And then we'll talk a little bit more about what you mean by leading our heart, because that's really good.
Okay, sure. So first thing we need to think about with an emergency saving fund is this is not an investment. The idea is not to earn interest, and this is not money we're going to be taking risks with because we want to, you know, maximize an amount. This is an insurance policy. So we put it in a separate account than our checking account, so it doesn't just disappear. But don't tie this up in long-term investments. Savings accounts, money market accounts, places you can easily get the money out of. Think of it this way. When your car breaks down, where are you going to go to get the money? You probably can't get it out of a long-term investment fund. You're not going to get it out of a retirement fund. So have that money available where you need it. As far as how to get there, the emergency saving fund, you know, we say about 2% of gross income for that, of annual gross income. And the reason we say that number is that's a number that most people can achieve within about a month or two worth of time. But it's also a number that's going to provide a meaningful amount in case a crisis situation comes up. So because this is a sprint, something we're going to do relatively quickly, we need to be willing to do things that we might not necessarily think of as sustainable or comfortable in the long run, but just things we're going to do for these 1 to 2 months to get that emergency savings together. Adjusting the spending plan may be part of that. Maybe cutting off some subscriptions for a couple of months. Maybe it means taking on some additional work that we wouldn't do for a long period of time, but for a couple of months to put together our emergency savings. Maybe it means selling some stuff. Again, not things we would expect to do month after month for years, but things that we would just do for the first couple of months to get that emergency savings together. For us, the way we did that was when we realized this is what we needed to do, I actually stopped my 401k contributions and diverted that money to emergency savings until we had built that up, and then I restarted those again.
That's awesome. So just a practical way is for anyone to look at what they have going on and figuring out what they're willing to give up or do to make that thing happen. Because like you just said, it's a sprint. So with that being said, if I can connect that back to something you said earlier, you said money is leading our hearts. What do you mean by that? Especially when it comes to this idea of saving, which if you aren't careful, can really lead you into that place of not good stewardship, right? Because, or not good management. You might think, oh, I have this, I have to just save it. It's irresponsible to spend it. That can feel stressful even. So talk to me a little bit about what money leading our hearts means, especially as it relates to saving.
Yeah, well, again, the quote was, and this is in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said that where our treasure is, our heart will be also. And he kind of, he pointed that out to, there's a story of a rich man who came to him in Luke 18 and said, you know, what must I do to be saved? And ultimately, Jesus got to where his heart was. And he said, you know, you lack one thing. You need to go sell everything you have and give it to the poor and then come and follow me. The one thing he lacked was his treasure was in his money. It wasn't in heaven. And so Jesus wanted him to, you know, to rethink about where that treasure was. His heart was being led by his money. And you know, it's funny, the verse says, he went away sad because he had great wealth. We don't usually think of it that way, right? But because that's where his heart was, that caused him to not be able to follow Jesus. So I think that's what we mean when we think about our money leads where our heart is. A lot of times, I think you can, there are certain disciplines, spiritual disciplines that you can undertake that actually, you know, they can become dry and rote, but they can also be the things that lead us closer to God. And the way we manage our money is definitely one of those.
That's so, so important. So let me play devil's advocate a little bit here, but, you know, this is a church. Let's just say, or maybe this is opposition advocate. I don't know. I don't care. Devil's advocate. What does it mean? Does it mean that if I'm enjoying money, like spending and, you know, eating out and shopping, does that mean that I'm wrong? Does that mean that money is because we talk about spending and how it can be enjoyable and if we're doing it right. So talk to me about, I just want to play the opposite for somebody listening and thinking, well, maybe I'm guilty if I'm enjoying spending money, like you just gave that example. So can you speak to that a little bit about why maybe that's not the case?
Yeah, you know, there's a balance in our lives. There's always a balance between, different, you know, more discipline type things and then just enjoyment type things. God made us as whole people. And he put us, you know, in possession of a planet, and he's given us things for us to enjoy. I mean, Paul writes to Timothy that God richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. So God is not, his desire for our money is not that, you know, that we feel like we can never spend anything. I mean, just because there are starving children in the world doesn't mean I can't go out to eat, right? I mean, if that were the standard, nobody would ever go out to eat. So it's not about, there is, I mentioned that parable of the rich young man. That guy was the only guy in all of the Gospels and in all the New Testament, really, where Jesus said, you need to sell everything and you need to live this life of kind of asceticism, right? That's the only time that occurred. Elsewhere in the New Testament, you know, we see people of means who had saved money, who were using that money, who were enjoying that money, and who used it for the kingdom as well. So I think there's a balance there. Certainly there's, you know, we can oversave to the point where we're hoarding. We can, and if we're feeling like we always have to be compulsively saving, that may be an indication that we're relying on money rather than on God for our security. And so, especially if that's our primary money motivation, which it is for me. So I think that's one of the questions we have to ask ourselves is, you know, are we relying on that money for security rather than on God? The other question we have to ask is, what's the opportunity cost of all that saving? If I've saved beyond what I need, you know, and I'm working a 70-hour a week job because I've climbed the corporate ladder and making a certain amount of money and just putting it all away, at some point in time, you know, what's the balance between saving what I need and spending time with my family, or, you know, spending time serving the community, or that sort of thing? So there's a balance to be had in all of that. And part of that balance is that God has given us possessions to enjoy. When he put Adam and Eve in charge of the garden, he didn't mean for the garden to be drudgery for them. He meant for them to enjoy the things he had put in their possession. I think the same is true for us. I think when we get to that point where we feel like, you know, we can't spend anything on ourselves, we either have to save or we have to live this life where we can't enjoy anything, that robs us of gratitude. I think, you know, in Deuteronomy 8, Moses says, you know, remember the Lord, it's he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. And when we get some enjoyment out of that wealth, that leads us to a heart of gratitude to God. And I think it helps keep things in better perspective for us.
Yes, 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 yes. Such good things. And I think you were just speaking to all lanes there. So let's take a second and maybe we'll switch gears just a little bit. So if you're starting from zero, so this is someone who maybe they could, I guess, be in any lane, but they're probably in lanes one or two. How do you continue to save even as you're navigating through the ups and downs of normal life? So soccer practice and light bill, you know, it's coming every month. Didn't nobody ask it to, but it's coming. And rent and all of that. How do you keep from letting the first crisis demolish what you've saved? How do you do that? Where do you begin if you're starting from zero? What's some good practical advice for our listeners?
Yeah, well, you know, the bad news is crisis is going to come. Right? We all know that. And some crises may come that will demolish what we've saved. That's just going to happen. You know, you put the savings together and the next thing you know, the car breaks down, or, you know, the air conditioner breaks down, or the refrigerator, or you've got some sort of unexpected medical expense. So these things happen. I mean, and in a way, the very crisis itself validates the reason why we're doing emergency saving, right? We're putting this money aside because we know that crisis is coming. You know, it's kind of like that proverb that talks about the ant storing up food in the summer because he knows winter's coming. Well, winter's coming for all of us. So we can't always prevent a crisis from demolishing our savings, but I think it's really mostly about more of a mindset than anything else. Our immediate reaction is, I just put all this money together and now it's gone. And now I got to start all over again. I can't believe this happened. That's where we go naturally. But if we can retrain ourselves to think in terms of, wow, you know, I had this crisis situation, but because of God's provision, because of his wisdom, I had the money to take care of it. You know, for the first time in my life, I got through a crisis without putting it on a credit card. That can really lead us to a place, again, of gratitude, of recognizing God's provision, of seeing his intervention in our lives. And I think that can be a, you know, again, a catalyst for spiritual growth, as well as a great source of gratitude for us.
Man, I love, love, love that. So maybe you've been saving for so long that it's become a habit to that point, to your point about feeling like it needs to be a mind shift is what I heard you say. So much of a habit that is really hard to let go of. So how do I retrain myself and reteach myself how to actually enjoy spending some of what I've saved?
Yeah, you know, I think that goes back to some of what we were saying earlier about the fact that God does provide us things for our enjoyment. James says every good and perfect gift is from above. So God expects us, you know, we're his children. We're not his slaves. So he wants us to enjoy the things we have, while at the same time, obviously, we know that he owns everything. So we are stewards of those things. In fact, I think the fact that we're stewards of them can add to our enjoyment because it takes away the stress. You know, if God decides to take away something or let some crisis come into our life, it was his money anyway, right? So I think BT made the statement that, you know, a financial planner isn't all that worried about what happens to your money. He's trying to make the best of it that he can, but he's not stressed out if the market goes down because it's your money, not his. If we feel the same way about what we own, quote unquote, that it's really God's, it really takes a lot of the stress away from us. So as far as thinking about, you know, again, that compulsion to save, I think, again, we have to think in terms of those trade-offs. We have to think in terms of, am I giving up time with family, time with, you know, time with my church, time serving my community? Should I be rethinking some of what I'm doing with saving? Am I saving because I don't trust God to provide? You know, I think those are the kinds of things that if we find ourselves in a compulsive saving position, those are the kinds of questions we should ask ourselves. And again, I don't think God calls most of us to an ascetic life. He does call some people to that. You know, we see it in Mother Teresa. We saw it, you know, with that call in Luke 18. But most people he doesn't call to live that way. And I think that we, when we force ourselves to live that way outside of his call, we're stepping outside his will just as much as if we were overspending, et cetera.
Man, such practical wisdom in here, Andrew. It sounds for sure like you know what you are talking about. And I know that our listeners are being helped. Let's switch gears just a tiny bit in these last few moments we have together. If saving is just delayed spending, which is what you described, we are saving up so that we can spend and so we don't have to worry about credit and the stress. And to your point, it's God's. And we get that joy of, look, I saved this. If it's just delayed spending, let's cast some vision. What are some of the cool things that you've heard about people that they've saved or that you've saved for yourself? And then the payoff was so sweet. Do you have any inspiring stories that you like to share with our audience?
Well, I don't know about inspiring, but, you know, one thing that happened to us last year, as a matter of fact, on the way back from seeing my wife's parents, the car broke down on the highway. Had to have it towed the last 100 miles home to Knoxville. And turned out our trusty car of 12 years had thrown a rod and it was done for. You know, it was going to cost more to repair it than the car was worth. You know, we went and looked for a new car, and we didn't buy a new car. We bought a used one, but, it was the first car we've ever actually been able to pay cash for. And because we had that, that margin, you know, we were able to get maybe a little nicer car than we would have otherwise. I'll fess up. We bought a van, you know, we bought a Kia Sedona. I've always wanted one. I know it's a nerd thing. I'm sorry. But you know, this car is so much more comfortable. It's nicer than the one we had, and we're moving now. So we've got something we can haul boxes in. So, you know, even though we didn't know we were saving specifically for that car, the fact that we had that money set aside meant that we could spend it on that car and get something we really wanted to have and not have to worry about it. You know, I've heard other stories about people saving up for vacations or maybe for, you know, new furniture or something like that, or a special event they wanted to go to. I think, like we mentioned earlier, the saving piece of that is what develops our spiritual muscles of patience and perseverance. And it's what gives us anticipation that, you know, there's not a day that I get in. We've had this van for a year now. There's not a day that I get in that van that I'm not just grateful for the fact that we have it and for God's provision. So to me, that's where it's really at in saving, is that it develops us spiritually and gives us a sense of gratitude.
That's awesome. So give me, I always ask all of our guests for this. What is the final 2% that you would want to give to our audience? That one thing you would want them to walk away with, and if they heard nothing else you said today, they need to hear this.
Wow. Great question. I wish you'd let me know that was coming.
It can be one sentence.
Yeah, you know, I think it would be that, again, it would be the spiritual benefits of saving. The fact that, you know, we know that our financial lives are a reflection and even a leading indicator of our spiritual lives. And saving is one of those things that that both reflects and develops our spiritual lives. It develops characteristics in us, you know, the fruit of the Spirit, a lot of the patience and peace and all those sorts of things. Saving can help develop those things in us. And even though it's not exciting, there's nothing new parked out in the driveway or anything like that from saving. But I think that if we look at our hearts and we look at, you know, what God is developing in us, saving is a great way to develop that.
That is amazing. You know what? I know that I learned a lot today. I know our audience got a lot out of this. I just want to encourage you, if you're listening right now, to just go back to any other episodes that you've missed and listen and re-listen and get re-encouraged, because this content really is developed with you in mind. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today, and we can't wait to see you again next time on the Freed Up Podcast, everyone.